I found Natasha in tears. Alyosha and she were both crying. Hearing that Katya was already there, she got up from the chair, wiped her eyes, and in great excitement stood up facing the door. She was dressed that morning all in white. Her dark brown hair was smoothly parted and gathered back in a thick knot. I particularly liked that way of doing her hair. Seeing that I was remaining with her, Natasha asked me too to go and meet the visitor.
"I could not get to Natasha's before," said Katya as she mounted the stairs. "I've been so spied on that it's awful. I've been persuading Madame Albert for a whole fortnight, and at last she consented. And you have never once been to see me, Ivan Petrovitch. I couldn't write to you either, and I don't feel inclined to. One can't explain anything in a letter. And how I wanted to see you. Good heavens, how my heart is beating."
"The stairs are steep," I answered.
"Yes, the stairs. Tell me, what do you think? Won't Natasha be angry with me?"
"No, why?"
"Well, why should she, after all? I shall see for myself directly. There's no need to ask questions."
I gave her my arm. She actually turned pale, and I believe she was very much frightened. On the last landing, she stopped to take breath, but she looked at me and went up resolutely. She stopped once more at the door and whispered to me,
"I shall simply go in and say I had such faith in her that I was not afraid to come. But why am I talking? I'm certain that Natasha is the noblest creature, isn't she?"
She went in timidly as though she were a culprit and looked intently at Natasha, who at once smiled at her. Then Katya ran swiftly to her, seized her hand and pressed her plump little lips to Natasha's. Then, without saying a word to Natasha, she turned earnestly and even sternly to Alyosha and asked him to leave us for half an hour alone.
"Don't be cross, Alyosha," she added. "It's because I have a great deal to talk about with Natasha, of very important and serious things that you ought not to hear. Be good and go away. But you stay, Ivan Petrovitch. You must hear all our conversation. Let us sit down,"
she said to Natasha when Alyosha had left the room.
"I'll sit like this opposite you. I want to look at you first."
She sat down almost exactly opposite Natasha and gazed at her for some minutes. Natasha responded with an involuntary smile.
"I have seen your photograph already,"
said Katya.
"Alyosha showed it to me. Well, am I like my portrait?" "You are nicer,"
said Katya earnestly and decisively.
"And I thought you would be nicer."
"Really? And I keep looking at you. How pretty you are.
Me? How can you? You darling,"
she added, taking Natasha's hand with her own, which trembled, and both relapsed into silence, gazing at each other.
"I must tell you, my angel,"
Katya broke the silence,
"we have only half an hour to be together. Madame Albert would hardly consent to that, and we have a great deal to discuss. I'll simply ask you, do you care very much for Alyosha?"
"Yes, very much."
"If so, if you care very much for Alyosha, then you must care for his happiness, too,"
she added timidly in a whisper.
"Yes, I want him to be happy."
"Yes, but this is the question. Shall I make him happy? Have I the right to say so, for I'm taking him away from you? If you think, and we decide now, that he will be happier with you, then...
"That's settled already, Katya dear. You see yourself that it's all settled,"
Natasha answered softly, and she bowed her head. It was evidently difficult for her to continue the conversation. Katya, I fancy, was prepared for a lengthy discussion on the question which of them would make Alyosha happy, and which of them ought to give him up. But after Natasha's answer, she understood that everything was settled already, and there was nothing to discuss. With her pretty lips half opened, she gazed with sorrow and perplexity at Natasha, still holding her hand.
"And you love him very much?"
Natasha asked suddenly.
"Yes, and there's another thing I wanted to ask you, and I came on purpose. Tell me, what do you love him for, exactly?"
"I don't know,"
answered Natasha, and there was a note of bitter impatience in her voice.
"Is he clever? What do you think?"
asked Katya.
"No, I simply love him."
"And I, too. I always feel somehow sorry for him."
"So do I,"
answered Natasha.
"What's to be done with him now? And how he could leave you for me, I can't understand,"
cried Katya.
"Now that I've seen you, I can't understand."
Natasha looked on the ground and did not answer. Katya was silent for a time, and then, getting up from her chair, she gently embraced her. They embraced each other and both shed tears. Katya sat on the arm of Natasha's chair, still holding her in her embrace, and began kissing her hands.
"If you only knew how I love you,"
she said, weeping.
"Let us be sisters. Let us always write to one another. And I will always love you. I shall love you so. Love you so."
"Did he speak to you of our marriage in June?"
asked Natasha.
"Yes. He said you'd consented. That's all just to comfort him, isn't it?"
"Of course.
That's how I understood it. I will love him truly, Natasha, and write to you about everything. It seems as though he will soon be my husband. It's coming to that, and they all say so. Darling Natasha, surely you will go home now."
Natasha did not answer, but kissed her warmly in silence.
"Be happy,"
she said.
And you too,
said Katya. At that moment the door opened and Alyosha came in. He had been unable to wait the whole half hour, and seeing them in each other's arms and both crying, he fell on his knees before Natasha and Katya in impotent anguish.
"Why are you crying?"
Natasha said to him.
"Because you're parting from me. But it's not for long. Won't you be back in June?
And then your marriage,"
Katya hastened to add through her tears, also to comfort Alyosha.
"But I can't leave you. I can't leave you for one day, Natasha. I shall die without you. You don't know how precious you are to me now, especially now."
"Well then, this is what you must do,"
said Natasha, suddenly reviving.
"The Countess will stay for a little while in Moscow, won't she?"
"Yes, almost a week,"
put in Katya.
"A week. Then what could be better? You'll escort her to Moscow tomorrow. That will only take one day, and then you can come back here at once. When they have to leave Moscow, we will part finally for a month, and you will go back to Moscow to accompany them."
"Yes, that's it, that's it. And you will have an extra 4 days to be together anyway,"
said Katya, enchanted, exchanging a significant glance with Natasha. I cannot describe Alyosha's rapture at this new project. He was at once completely comforted. His face was radiant with delight. He embraced Natasha, kissed Katya's hands, embraced me. Natasha looked at him with a mournful smile, but Katya could not endure it. She looked at me with feverish and glittering eyes, embraced Natasha, and got up to go. At that moment, the Frenchwoman appropriately sent a servant to request her to cut the interview short, and to tell her that the half hour agreed upon was over. Natasha got up. The two stood facing one another, holding hands, and seemed trying to convey with their eyes all that was stored up in their souls.
"We shall never see each other again, I suppose,"
said Katya.
"Never, Katya,"
answered Natasha.
"Well then, let us say goodbye."
They embraced each other.
"Do not curse me,"
Katya whispered hurriedly.
"I'll always, you may trust me. He shall be happy. Come, Alyosha, take me down,"
she articulated rapidly, taking his arm.
"Vanya,"
Natasha said to me in agitation and distress when they had gone.
"You follow them, and don't come back. Alyosha will be with me till the evening, till 8 o'clock. But he can't stay after. He's going away. I shall be left alone. Come at 9 o'clock, please."
When at 9 o'clock, leaving Nelly with Alexandra Semyonovna, after the incident with the broken cup, I reached Natasha's, she was alone and impatiently expecting me. Mavra set the samovar for us. Natasha poured me out tea, sat down on the sofa, and motioned me to come near her.
"So, everything is over,"
she said, looking intently at me. Never shall I forget that look.
"Now our love, too, is over. Half a year of life. And it's my whole life,"
she added, gripping my hands. Her hand was burning. I began persuading her to wrap herself up and go to bed.
"Presently, Vanya, presently, dear friend. Let me talk and recall things a little. I feel as though I were broken to pieces now. Tomorrow I shall see him for the last time at 10 o'clock. For the last time."
"Natasha, you're in a fever. You'll be shivering directly. Do think of yourself."
"Well, I've been waiting for you now, Vanya, for this half hour since you went away. And what do you think I've been thinking about? What do you think I've been wondering? I've been wondering, did I love him, or didn't I? And what sort of thing our love was? What, do you think it's absurd, Vanya, that I should only ask myself that now?"
"Don't agitate yourself, Natasha."
"You see, Vanya,
I decided that I didn't love him as an equal, as a woman usually loves a man. I loved him like, almost like a mother. I even fancy that there's no love in the world in which two love each other like equals. What do you think?"
I looked at her with anxiety and was afraid that it might be the beginning of brain fever. Something seemed to carry her away. She seemed to be impelled to speech. Some of her words were quite incoherent, and at times she even pronounced them indistinctly. I was very much alarmed.
"He was mine,"
she went on.
"Almost from the first time I met him, I had an overwhelming desire that he should be mine, mine at once, and that he should not look at anyone, should not know anyone but me. Katya expressed it very well this morning. I loved him, too, as though I were always sorry for him. I always had an intense longing, a perfect agony of longing when I was alone, that he should be always happy, awfully happy. His face, you know the expression of his face, Vanya. I can't look at it without being moved. No one else has such an expression, and when he laughs it makes me turn cold and shudder. Really?"
"Natasha, listen.
People say about him, and you've said it, that he has no will, and that he's not very clever, like a child. And that's what I loved in him more than anything. Would you believe it? I don't know, though, whether I loved that one thing. I just simply loved him altogether, and if he'd been different in some way, if he'd had will or been cleverer, perhaps I shouldn't have loved him so. Do you know, Vanya, I'll confess one thing to you. Do you remember we had a quarrel 3 months ago, when he'd been to see that, what's her name, that Mina? I knew of it, I found it out, and would you believe it, it hurt me horribly, and yet at the same time I was somehow pleased at it. I don't know why. The very thought that he was amusing himself, or no, it's not that, that, like a grown-up man, together with other men, he was running after pretty girls, that he too went to Mina's. What bliss I got out of that quarrel, and then forgiving him, oh, my dear one."
She looked into my face and laughed strangely. Then she sank into thought, as though recalling everything, and for a long time she sat like that, with a smile on her face, dreaming of the past.
"I loved forgiving him, Vanya,"
she went on.
"Do you know, when he left me alone, I used to walk about the room, fretting and crying, and then I would think that the worse he treated me, the better. Yes, and do you know, I always picture him as a little boy. I sit, and he lays his head on my knees and falls asleep, and I stroke his head softly and caress him. I always imagined him like that when he was not with me. Listen, Vanya,"
she added suddenly,
"what a charming creature Katya is."
It seemed to me that she was lacerating her own wounds on purpose, impelled to this by a sort of yearning, the yearning of despair and suffering, and how often that is so with a heart that has suffered great loss.
"Katya, I believe, can make him happy,"
she went on.
"She has character and speaks as though she had such conviction, and with him she's so grave and serious, and always talks to him about such clever things, as though she were grown up, and all the while she's a perfect child herself. The little dear, the little dear. Oh, I hope they'll be happy. I hope so, I hope so."
And her tears and sobs burst out in a perfect torrent. It was quite half an hour before she came to herself and recovered some degree of self-control. My sweet angel Natasha. Even that evening, in spite of her own grief, she could sympathize with my anxieties, when seeing that she was a little calmer, or rather wearied out, thinking to distract her mind, I told her about Nelly. We parted that evening late. I stayed till she fell asleep, and as I went out, I begged Mavra not to leave her suffering mistress all night. "Oh, for the end of this misery," I cried as I walked home. "To have it over quickly, quickly. Any end, anyhow, if only it can be quick." Next morning, at 9 o'clock precisely, I was with her again. Alyosha arrived at the same time to say goodbye. I will not describe this scene. I don't want to recall it. Natasha seemed to have resolved to control herself, to appear cheerful and unconcerned, but she could not. She embraced Alyosha passionately, convulsively. She did not say much to him, but for a long while she looked intently at him with an agonizing and almost frantic gaze. She hung greedily on every word he uttered, and yet seemed to take in nothing that he said. I remember he begged her to forgive him for his love and for all the injury he had done to her, to forgive his infidelities, his love for Katya, his going away. He spoke incoherently, his tears choked him. He sometimes began suddenly trying to comfort her, saying that he was only going away for a month, or at the most 5 weeks, that he would be back in the summer when they would be married, and that his father would consent, and above all that the day after tomorrow he would come back from Moscow, and then they would have 4 whole days together again, so now they were only being parted for 1 day. It was strange. He fully believed in what he said, and that he would certainly return from Moscow in 2 days. Why, then, was he so miserable and crying? At last 11 o'clock struck. It was with difficulty I persuaded him to go. The Moscow train left exactly at midday. There was only an hour left. Natasha said afterwards that she did not remember how she had looked at him for the last time. I remember that she made the sign of the cross over him, kissed him, and hiding her face in her hands, rushed back into the room. I had to see Alyosha all the way downstairs to his carriage, or he would certainly have returned and never have reached the bottom.
"You are our only hope,"
he said as we went downstairs.
"Dear Vanya, I have injured you and can never deserve your love, but always be a brother to me. Love her, do not abandon her. Write to me about everything, as fully, as minutely as possible. Write as much as you can. The day after tomorrow I shall be here again for certain. For certain, for certain. But afterwards, when I go away, write to me."
I helped him into his carriage.
"Till the day after tomorrow,"
he shouted to me as he drove off.
"For certain."
With a sinking heart, I went upstairs, back to Natasha. She was standing in the middle of the room with her arms folded, gazing at me with a bewildered look, as though she didn't recognize me. Her coil of hair had fallen to one side. Her eyes looked vacant and wandering. Mavra stood in the doorway, gazing at her, panic-stricken. Suddenly, Natasha's eyes flashed.
"Ah, that's you, you!"
she screamed at me.
"Now you are left alone. You hate him. You never could forgive him for my loving him. Now you are with me again. He's come to comfort me again, to persuade me to go back to my father, who flung me off and cursed me. I knew it would be so yesterday, 2 months ago. I won't, I won't. I curse them, too. Go away. I can't bear the sight of you. Go away, go away!"
I realized that she was frantic, and that the sight of me roused her anger to an intense pitch. I realized that this was bound to be so, and thought it better to go. I sat down on the top stair outside and waited. From time to time I got up, opened the door, beckoned to Mavra, and questioned her. Mavra was in tears. An hour and a half passed like this. I cannot describe what I went through in that time. My heart sank and ached with an intolerable pain. Suddenly the door opened and Natasha ran out with her cape and hat on. She hardly seemed to know what she was doing, and told me herself afterwards that she did not know where she was running, or with what object. Before I had time to jump up and hide myself, she saw me and stopped before me as though suddenly struck by something.
"I realized all at once,"
she told me afterwards,
"that in my cruelty and madness I had actually driven you away, you, my friend, my brother, my savior. And when I saw that you, poor boy, after being insulted by me, had not gone away, but were sitting on the stairs, waiting till I should call you back, my God, if you knew, Vanya, what I felt then. It was like a stab at my heart. Vanya, Vanya,"
she cried, holding out her hands to me.
"You are here."
And she fell into my arms. I caught her up and carried her into the room. She was fainting. What shall I do, I thought. She'll have brain fever for certain. I decided to run for a doctor. Something must be done to check the illness. I could drive there quickly. My old German was always at home till 2 o'clock. I flew to him, begging Mavra not for 1 minute, not for 1 second, to leave Natasha and not to let her go out. Fortune favored me. A little later and I should not have found my old friend at home. He was already in the street, just coming out of his house when I met him. Instantly I put him in my cab, before he had time to be surprised, and we hastened back to Natasha. Yes, fortune did favor me. During the half hour of my absence, something had happened to Natasha which might have killed her outright if the doctor and I had not arrived in the nick of time. Not a quarter of an hour after I had gone, Prince Valkosky had walked in. He had just been seeing the others off and had come to Natasha's straight from the railway station. This visit had probably been planned and thought out by him long before. Natasha told me that for the first minute she was not even surprised to see the prince.
"My brain was in a whirl,"
she said. He sat facing her, looking at her with a caressing and pathetic expression.
"My dear,"
he said, sighing,
I understand your grief. I know how hard it must be for you at this moment, and so I felt it my duty to come to you. Be comforted, if you can, if only that by renouncing Alyosha you have secured his happiness. But you understand that better than I, for you resolved on your noble action.
I sat and listened,
Natasha told me,
but at first I really did not understand him. I only remember that I stared and stared at him. He took my hand and began to press it in his. He seemed to find this very agreeable. I was so beside myself that I never thought of pulling my hand away.
You realized,
he went on,
that by becoming Alyosha's wife you might become an object of hatred to him later on, and you had honorable pride enough to recognize this and make up your mind. But I haven't come here to praise you. I only wanted to tell you that you will never, anywhere, find a truer friend than me. I sympathize with you and am sorry for you. I have been forced to have a share in all this against my will, but I have only done my duty. Your excellent heart will realize that and make peace with mine. But it has been harder for me than for you, believe me.
Enough, Prince,
said Natasha.
Leave me in peace.
Certainly, I will go directly,
he answered.
But I love you as though you were my own daughter, and you must allow me to come and see you. Look upon me now as though I were your father, and allow me to be of use to you.
I want nothing. Leave me alone.
Natasha interrupted again.
I know you are proud, but I'm speaking sincerely, from my heart. What do you intend to do now? To make peace with your parents? That would be a good thing. But your father is unjust, proud, and tyrannical. Forgive me, but that is so. At home you would meet now nothing but reproaches and fresh suffering. But you must be independent, and it is my obligation, my sacred duty, to look after you and help you now. Alyosha begged me not to leave you, but to be a friend to you. But besides me, there are people prepared to be genuinely devoted to you. You will, I hope, allow me to present you to Count Nainsky. He has the best of hearts. He is a kinsman of ours, and I may even say has been the protector of our whole family. He had done a great deal for Alyosha. Alyosha had the greatest respect and affection for him. He is a very powerful man with great influence, an old man, and it is quite possible for a girl like you to receive him. I have talked to him about you already. He can establish you and, if you wish it, find you an excellent position, with one of his relations. I gave him a full and straightforward account of our affair long ago, and I so enlisted his kind and generous feelings that now he keeps begging me to introduce him to you as soon as possible. He is a man who has a feeling for everything beautiful. Believe me, he is a generous old man, highly respected, able to recognize true worth, and indeed, not long ago he behaved in a most generous way to your father in a certain case.
Natasha jumped up as though she had been stung. Now, at last, she understood him.
Leave me at once,
she cried.
But, my dear, you forget. The Count may be of use to your father, too.
My father will take nothing from you. Leave me,
Natasha cried again.
Oh, how unjust and mistrustful you are. How have I deserved this?
Exclaimed the prince, looking about him with some uneasiness.
You will allow me in any case,
he went on, taking a large roll out of his pocket.
You will allow me in any case to leave with you this proof of my sympathy, and especially the sympathy of Count Nainsky, on whose suggestion I am acting. This roll contains 10,000 rubles. Wait a moment, my dear,
he said hurriedly, seeing that Natasha had jumped up from her seat angrily.
Listen patiently to everything. You know your father lost a lawsuit against me. This 10,000 will serve as a compensation, which—
Go away,
cried Natasha.
Take your money away. I see through you. Oh, base, base, base man.
Prince Valkovsky got up from his chair, pale with anger. Probably he had come to feel this way, to survey the position, and no doubt was building a great deal on the effect of the 10,000 rubles on Natasha, destitute and abandoned by everyone. The vile and brutal man had often been of service to Count Nainsky, a licentious old reprobate, in enterprises of this kind. But he hated Natasha, and realizing that things were not going smoothly, he promptly changed his tone, and with spiteful joy hastened to insult her, that he might anyway not have come for nothing.
That's not the right thing at all, my dear, for you to lose your temper,
he brought out, in a voice quivering with impatience to enjoy the effect of his insult.
That's not the right thing at all. You are offered protection, and you turn up your little nose. Don't you realize that you ought to be grateful to me?
I might have put you in a penitentiary long ago as the father of the young man you have led astray, but I haven't done it. Heh!
But by now we had come in. Hearing the voices while still in the kitchen, I stopped the doctor for a second and overheard the prince's last sentence. It was followed by his loathsome chuckle and a despairing cry from Natasha.
Oh, my God!
At that moment, I opened the door and rushed at the prince. I spat in his face and slapped him on the cheek with all my might. He would have flung himself upon me, but seeing that there were two of us, he took to his heels, snatching up the roll of notes from the table. Yes, he did that. I saw it myself. I threw after him the rolling pin, which I snatched from the kitchen table. When I ran back into the room, I saw the doctor was supporting Natasha, who was writhing and struggling out of his arms as though in convulsions. For a long time we could not soothe her. At last we succeeded in getting her to bed. She seemed to be in the delirium of brain fever.
Doctor, what's the matter with her?
I asked with a sinking heart.
Wait a little,
he answered.
I must watch the attack more closely and then form my conclusions. But speaking generally, things are very bad. It may even end in brain fever. But we will take measures, however.
A new idea had dawned upon me. I begged the doctor to remain with Natasha for another 2 or 3 hours, and made him promise not to leave her for 1 minute. He promised me, and I ran home. Nelly was sitting in a corner, depressed and uneasy, and she looked at me strangely. I must have looked strange myself. I took her hand, sat down on the sofa, took her on my knee, and kissed her warmly. She flushed.
"Nelly, my angel," I said to her, "would you like to be our salvation? Would you like to save us all?"
She looked at me in amazement.
"Nelly, you are my one hope now. There is a father. You've seen him and know him. He has cursed his daughter, and he came yesterday to ask you to take his daughter's place. Now she, Natasha, and you said you loved her, has been abandoned by the man she loved, for whose sake she left her father. He's the son of that prince who came, do you remember, one evening to see me, and found you alone, and you ran away from him and were ill afterwards. You know him, don't you? He's a wicked man."
"I know,"
said Nelly, trembling and turning pale.
"Yes, he's a wicked man. He hates Natasha because his son Alyosha wanted to marry her. Alyosha went away today, and an hour later his father went to Natasha and insulted her, and threatened to put her in a penitentiary, and laughed at her. Do you understand me, Nelly?"
Her black eyes flashed, but she dropped them at once.
"I understand,"
she whispered, hardly audibly.
"Now Natasha is alone, ill. I've left her with our doctor while I ran to you myself. Listen, Nelly, let us go to Natasha's father. You don't like him, you didn't want to go to him. But now let us go together. We'll go in, and I'll tell them that you want to stay with them now, and to take the place of their daughter Natasha. Her father is ill now, because he has cursed Natasha, and because Alyosha's father sent him a deadly insult the other day. He won't hear of his daughter now, but he loves her, Nelly, and wants to make peace with her. I know that, I know all that. That is so. Do you hear, Nelly?"
"I hear,"
she said, in the same whisper. I spoke to her with my tears flowing. She looked timidly at me.
"Do you believe it?"
"Yes."
"So I'll go in with you. I'll take you in, and they'll receive you, make much of you, and begin to question you.
Then I'll turn the conversation so that they will question you about your past life,
about your mother and your grandfather. Tell them, Nelly, everything, just as you told it to me. Tell them simply, and don't keep anything back. Tell them how your mother was abandoned by a wicked man, how she died in a cellar at Madame Bubnov's, how your mother and you used to go about the streets begging, what she said and what she asked you to do when she was dying. Tell them at the same time about your grandfather, how he wouldn't forgive your mother and how she sent you to him just before her death, how she died. Tell them everything, everything. And when you tell them all that, the old man will feel it all in his heart too. You see, he knows Alyosha has left her today and she is left insulted and injured, alone and helpless, with no one to protect her from the insults of her enemy. He knows all that. Nelly, save Natasha. Will you go?"
"Yes,"
she answered, drawing a painful breath, and she looked at me with a strange, prolonged gaze. There was something like reproach in that gaze, and I felt it in my heart. But I could not give up my idea. I had too much faith in it. I took Nelly by the arm, and we went out. It was past 2 o'clock in the afternoon. A storm was coming on. For some time past the weather had been hot and stifling, but now we heard in the distance the first rumble of early spring thunder. The wind swept through the dusty streets. We got into a droshky. Nelly did not utter a word all the way. She only looked at me from time to time with the same strange and enigmatic eyes. Her bosom was heaving, and holding her on the droshky, I felt against my hand the thumping of her little heart, which seemed as though it would leap out of her body. Chapter 7. The way seemed endless to me. At last we arrived, and I went in to my old friends with a sinking at my heart. I did not know what my leave-taking would be like, but I knew that at all costs I must not leave their house without having won forgiveness and reconciliation. It was by now past 3. My old friends were, as usual, sitting alone. Nikolai Sergeyitch was unnerved and ill, and lay pale and exhausted, half reclining in his comfortable easy-chair with his head tied up in a handkerchief. Anna Andreevna was sitting beside him, from time to time moistening his forehead with vinegar, and continually peeping into his face with a questioning and commiserating expression, which seemed to worry and even annoy the old man. He was obstinately silent, and she dared not be the first to speak. Our sudden arrival surprised them both. Anna Andreevna, for some reason, took fright at once on seeing me with Nelly, and for the first minute looked at us as though she suddenly felt guilty. "You see, I've brought my Nelly," I said, going in. "She has made up her mind, and now she has come to you of her own accord. Receive her and love her." The old man looked at me suspiciously, and from his eyes alone one could divine that he knew all, that is, that Natasha was now alone, deserted, abandoned, and by now perhaps insulted. He was very anxious to learn the meaning of our arrival, and he looked inquiringly at both of us. Nelly was trembling, and tightly squeezing my hand in hers, she kept her eyes on the ground and only from time to time stole frightened glances about her, like a little wild creature in a snare. But Anna Andreevna soon recovered herself and grasped the situation. She positively pounced on Nelly, kissed her, petted her, even cried over her, and tenderly made her sit beside her, keeping the child's hand in hers. Nelly looked at her askance with curiosity and a sort of wonder. But after fondling Nelly and making her sit beside her, the old lady did not know what to do next and began looking at me with naive expectation. The old man frowned, almost suspecting why I had brought Nelly. Seeing that I was noticing his fretful expression and frowning brows, he put his hand to his head and said,
"My headaches, Vanya."
All this time we sat without speaking. I was considering how to begin. It was twilight in the room, a black storm cloud was coming over the sky, and there came again a rumble of thunder in the distance.
"We're getting thunder early this spring," said the old man. "But I remember in 37 there were thunderstorms even earlier."
Anna Andreevna sighed.
"Shall we have the samovar?"
she asked timidly, but no one answered, and she turned to Nelly again.
"What is your name, my darling?"
she asked. Nelly uttered her name in a faint voice, and her head drooped lower than ever. The old man looked at her intently.
"The same as Elena, isn't it?"
Anna Andreevna went on with more animation.
"Yes,"
answered Nelly. And again a moment of silence followed.
"Praskovya Andreevna's sister had a niece whose name was Elena, and she used to be called Nelly too, I remember,"
observed Nikolai Sergeyitch.
"And have you no relations, my darling, neither father nor mother?"
Anna Andreevna asked again.
"No,"
Nelly jerked out in a timid whisper.
I'd heard so. "Is it long since your mother died?"
"No, not long."
"Poor darling, poor little orphan,"
Anna Andreevna went on, looking at her compassionately. The old man was impatiently drumming on the table with his fingers.
"Your mother was a foreigner, wasn't she? You told me so, didn't you, Ivan Petrovitch?"
the old lady persisted timidly. Nelly stole a glance at me out of her black eyes, as though begging me to help her. She was breathing in hard, irregular gasps. "Her mother was the daughter of an Englishman and a Russian woman, so she was more a Russian, Anna Andreevna. Nelly was born abroad."
"Why did her mother go to live abroad when she was married?"
Nelly suddenly flushed crimson. My old friend guessed at once that she had blundered and trembled under a wrathful glance from her husband. He looked at her severely and turned away to the window.
Her mother was deceived by a base, bad man,
he brought out suddenly, addressing Anna Andreevna.
She left her father on his account and gave her father's money into her lover's keeping, and he got it from her by a trick, took her abroad, robbed and deserted her. A good friend remained true to her and helped her up to the time of his death. And when he died, she came, 2 years ago, back to Russia, to her father. Wasn't that what you told us, Vanya?
He asked me abruptly. Nelly got up in great agitation and tried to move towards the door.
Come here, Nelly,
said the old man, holding out his hand to her at last.
Sit here, sit beside me. Here, sit down.
He bent down, kissed her, and began softly stroking her head. Nelly was quivering all over, but she controlled herself. Anna Andreevna, with emotion and joyful hope, saw how her Nikolai Sergeyitch was at last beginning to take to the orphan.
I know, Nelly, that a wicked man, a wicked, unprincipled man, ruined your mother, but I know, too, that she loved and honored her father.
The old man, still stroking Nelly's head, brought out with some excitement, unable to resist throwing down this challenge to us. A faint flush suffused his pale cheeks, but he tried not to look at us.
Mother loved grandfather better than he loved her,
Nelly asserted timidly but firmly. She, too, tried to avoid looking at anyone.
How do you know?
The old man asked sharply, as impulsive as a child, though he seemed ashamed of his impatience.
I know,
Nelly answered jerkily.
He would not receive mother, and turned her away.
I saw that Nikolai Sergeyitch was on the point of saying something, making some reply such as that the father had good reason not to receive her, but he glanced at us and was silent.
Why, where were you living when your grandfather wouldn't receive you?
Asked Anna Andreevna, who showed a sudden obstinacy and desire to continue the conversation on that subject.
When we arrived, we were a long while looking for grandfather,
answered Nelly.
But we couldn't find him anyhow. Mother told me then that grandfather had once been very rich and meant to build a factory, but that now he was very poor because the man that mother went away with had taken all grandfather's money from her and wouldn't give it back. She told me that herself.
Responded the old man.
And she told me, too,
Nelly went on, growing more and more earnest and seeming anxious to answer Nikolai Sergeyitch, though she addressed Anna Andreevna.
She told me that grandfather was very angry with her, and that she had behaved very wrongly to him, and that she had no one in the whole world but grandfather. And when she told me this, she cried. He will never forgive me, she said, when first we arrived, but perhaps he will see you and love you, and for your sake he will forgive me. Mother was very fond of me, and she always used to kiss me when she said this, and she was very much afraid of going to grandfather. She taught me to pray for grandfather. She used to pray herself, and she told me a great deal of how she used to live in old days with grandfather, and how grandfather used to love her above everything. She used to play the piano to him and read to him in the evening, and grandfather used to kiss her and give her lots of presents. He used to give her everything. So that one day they had a quarrel on Mother's name's day, because Grandfather thought Mother didn't know what present he was going to give her, and Mother had found out long before. Mother wanted earrings, and Grandfather tried to deceive her and told her it was going to be a brooch, not earrings. And when he gave her the earrings and saw that Mother knew that it was going to be earrings and not a brooch, he was angry that Mother had found out, and wouldn't speak to her for half the day, but afterwards he came of his own accord to kiss her and ask her forgiveness.
Nelly was carried away by her story, and there was a flush on her pale, wan little cheek. It was evident that more than once in their corner in the basement the mother had talked to her little Nelly of her happy days in the past, embracing and kissing the little girl who was all that was left to her in life, and weeping over her, never suspecting what a powerful effect these stories had on the frail child's morbidly sensitive and prematurely developed feelings. But Nelly seemed suddenly to check herself. She looked mistrustfully around and was mute again. The old man frowned and drummed on the table again. A tear glistened in Anna Andreevna's eye, and she silently wiped it away with her handkerchief.
Mother came here very ill,
Nelly went on in a low voice.
Her chest was very bad. We were looking for grandfather a long time, and we couldn't find him, and we took a corner in an underground room.
A corner? An invalid?
Cried Anna Andreevna.
Yes, a corner,
answered Nelly.
Mother was poor. Mother told me,
she added with growing earnestness,
that it's no sin to be poor, but it's a sin to be rich and insult people, and that God was punishing her,
It was in Vasilyevsky Island you lodged. At Madame Bubnov's, wasn't it?
The old man asked, turning to me, trying to throw a note of unconcern into his question. He spoke as though he felt it awkward to remain silent.
No, not there. At first it was in Miestchensky Street,
Nelly answered.
It was very dark and damp there,
she added after a pause.
And Mother got very ill there, though she was still walking about then. I used to wash the clothes for her, and she used to cry. There used to be an old woman living there too, the widow of a captain, and there was a retired clerk, and he always came in drunk and made a noise every night. I was dreadfully afraid of him. Mother used to take me into her bed and hug me, and she trembled all over herself while he used to shout and swear. Once he tried to beat the captain's widow, and she was a very old lady and walked with a stick. Mother was sorry for her, and she stood up for her. The man hit Mother too, and I hit him.
Nelly stopped. The memory agitated her. Her eyes were blazing.
Good heavens,
cried Anna Andreevna, entirely absorbed in the story, and keeping her eyes fastened upon Nelly, who addressed her principally.
Then Mother went away from there,
Nelly went on,
and took me with her. That was in the daytime. We were walking about the streets till it was quite evening, and Mother was walking about and crying all the time and holding my hand. I was very tired. We had nothing to eat that day. And Mother kept talking to herself and saying to me, "Be poor, Nelly, and when I die, don't listen to anyone or anything. Don't go to anyone. Be alone and poor and work. And if you can't get work, beg alms. Don't go to him." It was dusk when we crossed a big street. Suddenly Mother cried out, "Azorka, Azorka!" And a big dog, whose hair had all come off, ran up to Mother, whining and jumping up to her. And Mother was frightened. She turned pale, cried out, and fell on her knees before a tall old man, who walked with a stick, looking at the ground. And the tall old man was Grandfather, and he was so thin and in such poor clothes. That was the first time I saw Grandfather. Grandfather was very much frightened too, and turned very pale. And when he saw Mother kneeling before him and embracing his feet, he tore himself away, pushed Mother off, struck the pavement with his stick, and walked quickly away from us. Azorka stayed behind and kept whining and licking Mother, and then ran after Grandfather and took him by his coat-tail and tried to pull him back. And Grandfather hit him with his stick. Azorka was going to run back to us, but Grandfather called to him. He ran after Grandfather and kept whining. And Mother lay as though she were dead. A crowd came round and the police came. I kept calling out and trying to get Mother up. She got up, looked round her, and followed me. I led her home. People looked at us a long while and kept shaking their heads.
Nelly stopped to take breath and make a fresh effort. She was very pale, but there was a gleam of determination in her eyes. It was evident that she had made up her mind at last to tell all. There was something defiant about her at this moment.
Well,
observed Nikolai Sergeyitch in an unsteady voice, with a sort of irritable harshness.
Well, your mother had injured her father, and he had reason to repulse her.
Mother told me that too,
Nelly retorted sharply.
And as she walked home, she kept saying, "That's your grandfather, Nelly, and I sinned against him, and he cursed me, and that's why God has punished me." And all that evening and all the next day she kept saying this, and she talked as though she didn't know what she was saying.
The old man remained silent.
And how was it you moved into another lodging?
Asked Anna Andreevna, still crying quietly.
That night Mother fell ill, and the captain's widow found her a lodging at Madame Bubnov's, and 2 days later we moved, and the captain's widow with us. And after we'd moved, Mother was quite ill and in bed for 3 weeks, and I looked after her. All our money had gone, and we were helped by the captain's widow and Ivan Alexandrich.
The coffin maker, their landlord, I explained.
And when Mother got up and began to go about, she told me all about Azorka.
Nelly paused. The old man seemed relieved to turn the conversation to the dog.
What did she tell you about Azorka?
He asked, bending lower in his chair so as to look down and hide his face more completely.
She kept talking to me about Grandfather,
answered Nelly.
And when she was ill, she kept talking about him, and as soon as she began to get better, she used to tell me how she used to live. Then she told me about Azorka, because some horrid boys tried once to drown Azorka in the river outside the town, and Mother gave them some money and bought Azorka. And when Grandfather saw Azorka, he laughed very much. Only Azorka ran away. Mother cried. Grandfather was frightened, and promised 100 rubles to anyone who would bring back Azorka. 2 days after, Azorka was brought back. Grandfather gave 100 rubles for him, and from that time he got fond of Azorka. And Mother was so fond of him that she used even to take him to bed with her. She told me that Azorka had been used to performing in the street with some actors, and knew how to do his part, and used to have a monkey riding on his back, and knew how to use a gun, and lots of other things. And when Mother left him, Grandfather kept Azorka with him, and always went out with him, so that as soon as Mother saw Azorka in the street, she guessed at once that Grandfather was close by.
The old man had evidently not expected this about Azorka, and he scowled more and more. He asked no more questions.
"So you didn't see your grandfather again?"
asked Anna Andreevna.
"Yes, when Mother had begun to get better, I met Grandfather again. I was going to the shop to get some bread. Suddenly I saw a man with Azorka. I looked closer and saw it was Grandfather. I stepped aside and squeezed up against the wall. Grandfather looked at me. He looked so hard at me and was so terrible that I was awfully afraid of him and walked by. Azorka remembered me and began to jump about me and lick my hands. I went home quickly, looked back, and Grandfather went into the shop. Then I thought, he's sure to make inquiries, and I was more frightened than ever, and when I went home I said nothing to Mother for fear she should be ill again. I didn't go to the shop next day. I said I had a headache, and when I went the day after, I met no one. I was terribly frightened so that I ran fast. But a day later I went, and I'd hardly got round the corner when Grandfather stood before me with Azorka. I ran and turned into another street and went to the shop a different way, but I suddenly came across him again, and was so frightened that I stood quite still and couldn't move. Grandfather stood before me and looked at me a long time, and afterwards stroked my head, took me by the hand and led me along, while Azorka followed behind, wagging his tail. Then I saw that Grandfather couldn't walk properly, but kept leaning on his stick, and his hands were trembling all the time. He took me to a stall at the corner of the street where gingerbread and apples were sold. Grandfather bought a gingerbread cock and a fish, and a sweetmeat and an apple, and when he took the money out of his leather purse, his hands shook dreadfully, and he dropped a penny, and I picked it up. He gave me that penny, and gave me the gingerbread, and stroked me on the head, but still he said nothing, but walked away. Then I went to Mother and told her all about Grandfather, and how frightened I had been of him at first, and had hidden from him. At first Mother didn't believe me, but afterwards she was so delighted that she asked me questions all the evening, kissed me and cried, and when I had told her all about it she told me for the future not to be afraid of him, and that Grandfather must love me since he came up to me on purpose, and she told me to be nice to Grandfather and to talk to him. Next day she sent me out several times in the morning, though I told her that Grandfather never went out except in the evening. She followed me at a distance, hiding behind a corner. Next day she did the same, but Grandfather didn't come, and it rained those days, and Mother caught a bad cold coming down to the gate with me, and had to go to bed again. Grandfather came a week later, and again bought me a gingerbread fish and an apple, and said nothing that time either. And when he walked away I followed him quietly, because I had made up my mind beforehand that I'd find out where Grandfather lived and tell Mother. I walked a long way behind on the other side of the street, so that Grandfather didn't see me. And he lived very far away, not where he lived afterwards and died, but in another big house in Gorohovoy Street, on the fourth story. I found out all that, and it was late when I got home. Mother was horribly frightened, for she didn't know where I was. When I told her, she was delighted again, and wanted to go to see Grandfather next day. The next day she began to think and be afraid, and went on being afraid for 3 whole days, so she didn't go at all. And then she called me and said, "Listen, Nelly, I'm ill now and can't go, but I've written a letter to your grandfather. Go to him and give him the letter. And see, Nelly, how he reads it, and what he says, and what he'll do. And you kneel down and kiss him, and beg him to forgive your mother." And Mother cried dreadfully and kept kissing me, and making the sign of the cross and praying, and she made me kneel down with her before the icon, and though she was very ill, she went with me as far as the gate, and when I looked round she was still standing, watching me go. I went to Grandfather's and opened the door. The door had no latch. Grandfather was sitting at the table eating bread and potatoes, and Azorka stood watching him eat and wagging his tail. In that lodging, too, the windows were low and dark. And there, too, there was only one table and one chair, and he lived alone. I went in, and he was so frightened that he turned white and began to tremble. I was frightened, too, and didn't say a word. I only went up to the table and put down the letter. When Grandfather saw the letter, he was so angry that he jumped up, lifted his stick, and shook it at me. But he didn't hit me, he only led me into the passage and pushed me. Before I had got down the first flight of stairs, he opened the door again and threw the letter after me without opening it. I went home and told Mother all about it. Then Mother was ill in bed again.
Chapter 8. At that moment there was a rather loud peal of thunder, and heavy raindrops pattered on the window panes. The room grew dark. Anna Andreevna seemed alarmed and crossed herself. We were all startled.
"It will soon be over,"
said the old man, looking towards the window. Then he got up and began walking up and down the room. Nelly looked askance at him. She was in a state of extreme abnormal excitement. I saw that, though she seemed to avoid looking at me.
"Well, what next?"
asked the old man, sitting down in his easy chair again. Nelly looked round timidly.
"So, you didn't see your grandfather again?"
"Yes, I did. Yes, yes. Tell us, darling, tell us,"
Anna Andreevna put in hastily.
"I didn't see him for 3 weeks,"
said Nelly.
"Not till it was quite winter. It was winter then, and the snow had fallen. When I met Grandfather again at the same place, I was awfully pleased, for Mother was grieving that he didn't come. When I saw him, I ran to the other side of the street on purpose that he might see I ran away from him. Only I looked round and saw that Grandfather was following me quickly, and then ran to overtake me, and began calling out to me, 'Nelly, Nelly!' And Azorka was running after me. I felt sorry for him, and I stopped. Grandfather came up, took me by the hand, and led me along, and when he saw I was crying, he stood still, looked at me, bent down, and kissed me. Then he saw that my shoes were old, and he asked me if I had no others. I told him as quickly as I could that Mother had no money, and that the people at our lodging only gave us something to eat out of pity. Grandfather said nothing, but he took me to the market and bought me some shoes and told me to put them on at once, and then he took me home with him, and went first into a shop and bought a pie and 2 sweetmeats, and when we arrived he told me to eat the pie, and he looked at me while I ate it, and then he gave me the sweetmeats. And Azorka put his paws on the table and asked for some pie too. I gave him some, and Grandfather laughed. Then he took me, made me stand beside him, began stroking my head, and asked me whether I had learned anything and what I knew. I answered him, and he told me whenever I could to come at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that he would teach me himself. Then he told me to turn away and look out of the window till he told me to look round again. I did as he said, but I peeped round on the sly, and I saw him unpick the bottom corner of his pillow and take out 4 roubles. Then he brought them to me and said, 'That's only for you.' I was going to take them, but then I changed my mind and said, 'If it's only for me, I won't take them.' Grandfather was suddenly angry and said to me, 'Well, do as you please. Go away.' I went away, and he didn't kiss me. When I got home, I told Mother everything, and Mother kept getting worse and worse. A medical student used to come and see the coffin maker. He saw Mother and told her to take medicine. I used to go and see Grandfather often. Mother told me to. Grandfather bought a New Testament and a geography book and began to teach me, and sometimes he used to tell me what countries there are and what sort of people live in them, and all the seas and how it used to be in old times, and how Christ forgave us all. When I asked him questions, he was very much pleased, and so I often asked him questions, and he kept telling me things, and he talked a lot about God. And sometimes we didn't have lessons, but played with Azorka. Azorka began to get fond of me, and I taught him to jump over a stick, and Grandfather used to laugh and pat me on the head. Only Grandfather did not often laugh. One time he would talk a great deal, and then he would suddenly be quiet and seem to fall asleep, though his eyes were open. And so he would sit till it was dark, and when it was dark he would become so dreadful, so old. Another time I'd come and find him sitting in his chair thinking, and he'd hear nothing, and Azorka would be lying near him. I would wait and wait and cough, and still Grandfather wouldn't look round, and so I'd go away, and at home Mother would be waiting for me. She would be there, and I would tell her everything, everything, so that night would come on, while I'd still be telling her, and she'd still be listening about Grandfather, what he'd done that day and what he'd said to me, the stories he had told me and the lessons he'd given me. And when I told her how I'd made Azorka jump over a stick, and how Grandfather had laughed, she suddenly laughed too, and she would laugh and be glad for a long time, and make me repeat it again, and then begin to pray. And I was always thinking that Mother loved Grandfather so much, and Grandfather didn't love her at all, and when I went to Grandfather's, I told him on purpose how much Mother loved him, and was always asking about him. He listened, looked so angry, but still he listened, and didn't say a word. Then I asked him why it was that Mother loved him so much that she was always asking about him, while he never asked about Mother. Grandfather got angry and turned me out of the room. I stood outside the door for a little while, and he suddenly opened the door and called me in again, and still he was angry and silent. And afterwards, when we began reading the Gospel, I asked him again why Jesus Christ said, "Love one another and forgive injuries," and yet he wouldn't forgive Mother. Then he jumped up and said that Mother had told me that, put me out again, and told me never to dare come and see him again. And I said that I wouldn't come and see him again anyhow, and went away. And next day Grandfather moved from his lodgings.
I said the rain would soon be over. See, it is over. The sun's come out. Look, Vanya,
said Nikolai Sergeyitch, turning to the window. Anna Andreevna turned to him with extreme surprise, and suddenly there was a flash of indignation in the eyes of the old lady, who had till then been so meek and overawed. Silently she took Nelly's hand and made her sit on her knee.
"Tell me, my angel," she said. "I will listen to you. Let the hard-hearted—"
She burst into tears without finishing. Nelly looked questioningly at me, as though in hesitation and dismay. The old man looked at me, seemed about to shrug his shoulders, but at once turned away. "Go on, Nelly," I said.
"For 3 days I didn't go to Grandfather,"
Nelly began again.
"And at that time Mother got worse. All our money was gone, and we had nothing to buy medicine with, and nothing to eat, for the coffin-maker and his wife had nothing either, and they began to scold us for living at their expense. Then on the 3rd day I got up and dressed. Mother asked where I was going. I said to Grandfather to ask for money, and she was glad, for I had told Mother already about how he had turned me out, and had told her that I didn't want to go to him again, though she cried and tried to persuade me to go. I went and found out that Grandfather had moved, so I went to look for him in the new house. As soon as I went in to see him in his new lodging, he jumped up, rushed at me and stamped, and I told him at once that Mother was very ill, that we couldn't get medicine without money, 50 kopecks, and that we'd nothing to eat. Grandfather shouted and drove me out onto the stairs and latched the door behind me. And when he turned me out, I told him I should sit on the stairs and not go away until he gave me the money. And I sat down on the stairs. In a little while he opened the door, and seeing I was sitting there, he shut it again. Then, after a long time, he opened it again, saw me, and shut it again. And after that, he opened it several times and looked out. Afterwards he came out with a Zorka, shut the door, and passed by me without saying a word. And I didn't say a word, but went on sitting there, and sat there till it got dark."
"My darling,"
cried Anna Andreevna,
"but it must have been so cold on the staircase."
"I had on a warm coat,"
Nelly answered.
"A coat, indeed. Poor darling, what miseries you've been through. What did he do then, your grandfather?"
Nelly's lips began to quiver, but she made an extraordinary effort and controlled herself.
"He came back when it was quite dark and stumbled against me as he came up, and cried out, 'Who is it?' I said it was I. He must have thought I'd gone away long ago, and when he saw I was still there, he was very much surprised, and for a long while he stood still before me. Suddenly he hit the steps with his stick, ran and opened his door, and a minute later brought me out some coppers and threw them to me on the stairs. 'Here, take this,' he cried. 'That's all I have. Take it and tell your mother that I curse her.' And then he slammed the door. The money rolled down the stairs. I began picking it up in the dark, and Grandfather seemed to understand that he'd thrown the money on the stairs, and that it was difficult for me to find it in the dark. He opened the door and brought out a candle, and by candlelight I soon picked it up. And Grandfather picked some up too, and told me that it was 70 kopecks altogether, and then he went away. When I got home, I gave Mother the money, and told her everything, and Mother was worse, and I was ill all night myself, and next day too. I was all in a fever. I was angry with Grandfather. I could think of nothing else, and when Mother was asleep, I went out to go to his lodging, and before I got there, I stopped on the bridge, and then he passed by."
"Arhipov," I said. "The man I told you about, Nikolai Sergeyitch. The man who was with the young merchant at Madame Bubnov's and who got a beating there. Nelly saw him then for the first time. Go on, Nelly."
"I stopped him and asked him for some money, a silver ruble. He said, 'A silver ruble?' I said, 'Yes.' Then he laughed and said, 'Come with me.' I didn't know whether to go. An old man in gold spectacles came up and heard me ask for the silver ruble. He stooped down and asked me why I wanted so much. I told him that Mother was ill, and that I wanted as much for medicine. He asked where we lived, and wrote down the address, and gave me a ruble note. and when the other man saw the gentleman in spectacles, he walked away and didn't ask me to come with him any more. I went into a shop and changed the ruble. 30 kopecks I wrapped up in paper and put apart for mother, and 70 kopecks I didn't put in paper, but held it in my hand on purpose and went to grandfather's. When I got there, I opened the door, stood in the doorway, and threw all the money into the room so that it rolled about the floor. "There, take your money," I said to him. "Mother doesn't want it since you curse her." Then I slammed the door and ran away at once.
Her eyes flashed, and she looked with naive defiance at the old man.
"Quite right, too,"
said Anna Andreevna, not looking at Nikolai Sergeyitch and pressing Nelly in her arms.
"It served him right. Your grandfather was wicked and cruel-hearted."
Responded Nikolai Sergeyitch.
"Well, what then? What then?"
Anna Andreevna asked impatiently.
"I left off going to see grandfather, and he left off coming to meet me,"
said Nelly.
"Well, how did you get on, then? Your mother and you? Ah, poor things, poor things!"
"And mother got worse still, and she hardly ever got up,"
Nelly went on, and her voice quivered and broke.
"We had no more money, and I began to go out with the captain's widow. She used to go from house to house, and stop good people in the street, too, begging. That was how she lived. She used to tell me she wasn't a beggar, that she had papers to show her rank, and to show that she was poor, too. She used to show these papers, and people used to give her money for that. She used to tell me that there was no disgrace in begging from all. I used to go out with her, and people gave us money, and that's how we lived. Mother found out about it because the other lodgers blamed her for being a beggar, and Madame Bubnov herself came to Mother and said she'd better let me go for her instead of begging in the street. She'd been to see Mother before and brought her money, and when Mother wouldn't take it from her, she said why was she so proud, and sent her things to eat. And when she said this about me, Mother was frightened and began to cry, and Madame Bubnov began to swear at her, for she was drunk, and told her that I was a beggar anyway, and used to go out with the captain's widow, and that evening she turned the captain's widow out of the house. When Mother heard about it, she began to cry. Then she suddenly got out of bed, dressed, took my hand, and led me out with her. Ivan Alexandrich tried to stop her, but she wouldn't listen to him, and we went out. Mother could scarcely walk, and had to sit down every minute or two in the street, and I supported her. Mother kept saying that she would go to grandfather, and that I was to take her there, and by then it was quite night. Suddenly we came into a big street. There, a lot of carriages were waiting outside one of the houses, and a great many people were coming out. There were lights in all the windows, and one could hear music. Mother stopped, clutched me, and said to me then, "Nelly, be poor all your life. Don't go to him, whoever calls you, whoever comes to you. You might be there, rich and finely dressed, but I don't want that. They are cruel and wicked, and this is what I bid you. Remain poor, work, and ask for alms, and if anyone comes after you, say, 'I won't go with you.' That's what Mother said to me when she was ill, and I want to obey her all my life,"
Nelly added, quivering with emotion, her little face glowing.
"And I'll work and be a servant all my life, and I've come to you, too, to work and be a servant. I don't want to be like a daughter."
"Hush, hush, my darling, hush,"
cried Anna Andreevna, clasping Nelly warmly.
"Your mother was ill, you know, when she said that."
"She was out of her mind," said the old man sharply.
"What if she were?"
cried Nelly, turning quickly to him.
"If she were out of her mind, she told me so, and I shall do it all my life. And when she said that to me, she fell down, fainting."
"Merciful heavens,"
cried Anna Andreevna.
"Ill, in the street, in winter.
They would have taken us to the police, but a gentleman took our part, asked me our address, gave me 10 roubles, and told them to drive Mother to our lodging in his carriage. Mother never got up again after that, and 3 weeks afterwards she died."
"And her father? He didn't forgive her after all, then?"
cried Anna Andreevna.
"He didn't forgive her,"
answered Nelly, mastering herself with a painful effort.
"A week before her death, Mother called me to her and said, 'Nelly, go once more to your grandfather, the last time, and ask him to come to me and forgive me. Tell him in a few days I shall be dead, leaving you all alone in the world. And tell him, too, that it's hard for me to die.' I went and knocked at grandfather's door. He opened it, and as soon as he saw me, he meant to shut it again, but I seized the door with both hands and cried out to him, 'Mother's dying, she's asking for you, come along.' But he pushed me away and slammed the door. I went back to Mother, lay down beside her, hugged her in my arms, and said nothing. Mother hugged me, too, and asked no questions."
At this point, Nikolai Sergeyitch leant his hands heavily on the table and stood up, but after looking at us all with strange, lusterless eyes, sank back into his easy chair helplessly. Anna Andreevna no longer looked at him. She was sobbing over Nelly.
The last day before Mother died, towards evening, she called me to her, took me by the hand, and said, "I shall die today, Nelly." She tried to say something more, but she couldn't. I looked at her, but she seemed not to see me, only she held my hand tight in hers. I softly pulled away my hand and ran out of the house, and ran all the way to Grandfather's. When he saw me, he jumped up from his chair and looked at me, and was so frightened that he turned quite pale and trembled. I seized his hand and only said, "She's just dying." Then, all of a sudden, in a flurry, he picked up his stick and ran after me. He even forgot his hat, and it was cold. I picked up his hat and put it on him, and we ran off together. I hurried him and told him to take a sledge because Mother was just dying, but Grandfather only had 7 kopecks. That was all he had. He stopped a cab and began to bargain, but they only laughed at him and laughed at Azorka. Azorka was running with us, and we all ran on and on. Grandfather was tired and breathing hard, but he still hurried on, running. Suddenly he fell down and his hat fell off. I helped him up and put his hat on and led him by the hand, and only towards night we got home. But Mother was already lying dead. When Grandfather saw her, he flung up his hands, trembled, and stood over her, but said nothing. Then I went up to my dead mother, seized Grandfather's hand, and cried out to him, "See, you wicked, cruel man! Look, look!" Then Grandfather screamed and fell down as though he were dead.
Nelly jumped up, freed herself from Anna Andreevna's arms, and stood in the midst of us, pale, exhausted, and terrified. But Anna Andreevna flew to